When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Happy Wednesday to you, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in today. Dr. Blodgett is joining us in just a second. I see he's actually at the front door at this very moment. We're gonna have Dr. Blodgett, let him catch his breath for a minute, talk for a minute about aliens. Stockton, he's in, so you're good. We're gonna let Dr. Blodgett catch his breath, and we'll talk for a minute about the story I wrote for our website, 890kdxu.com, yesterday. It's about aliens. Okay, so Stockton, you're a man of experience. You're 28 now. Aliens, real? Not real.
Here's my thought. The universe is too darn big to comprehend every single bit of it, and to say that there's no life on any other part of the universe. We don't know a lot about the universe, and not to mention there are other universes. So it's just...
All right, I'm going to throw some numbers at you. 2 out of 3 Americans believe there is intelligent life out there somewhere.
So I'm part of that.
So, yeah, I would say I am as well. Do I have proof? Absolutely not.
No.
Do I have hope and belief? Yeah, I kind of do.
Yeah.
I feel like there are. The more complicated part is, have any of those... other life forms visited Earth, and I'm a little skeptical on that one.
I'm more on the side of no, I don't think so.
Now, I had Congressman Chris Stewart on. It was last year, and you know, he's a world famous pilot. He's piloted rescue helicopters as well as big giant bombers, and he says he's seen things in the sky that he cannot explain. So what that means is I'm not going to call them aliens. I'm not going to call them. We'll call them UFOs because they're unidentified or unexplained, he said. But he said he saw things up there flying those big old bombers and those big old jets high in the sky that he says he doesn't have an explanation for. So, yeah, I go along with that. There's some things that we don't understand, or maybe the government has told us yet. But anyway, I'm going to point folks to this article I wrote. It's called St. George Among Cities That Rank High in UFO Reports. This year in St. George, 37 reportings, there's a National UFO Reporting Center, 37, from the city of St. George, people have reported seeing some kind of unexplained flying object. So.
Or UAP, yes, as they like to call them now.
Aerial phenomena, I guess.
Unidentified aerial phenomena.
Which is kind of weird because it means exactly the same thing as an unidentified flying object, but whatever. So, Dr. Blodgett is here. Hopefully we gave him a second to catch his breath. You doing okay, Doc?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in, man. It's good to see you.
Yeah.
Aliens?
I keep packing my schedule too tightly. I'll fix that, so I apologize.
I know this isn't your area of expertise, but aliens, like I said, I'm pretty skeptical they've come here, but I'm kind of the opinion that somewhere out there there's probably, I mean, there has to be, right?
I think so.
There has to be, so... Let's go to some areas where you are an expert in. How about that? We'll change the topic. I was on, Stockton, thank you, appreciate that. I was on the Utah health website and public health website, and they broke it down to 30 different health topics, public health topics. And I thought, it'd be kind of fun to talk about some of those. There's 30 of them. So, and actually, you know, in 50 minutes minus commercials, we could give each one minute, or we can just talk about some of them maybe that are more public health oriented and more, you know, more in your.
Maybe it's three shows. We do 10 shows.
Yeah, good point. Number one on the list, though, was air quality. And as a public health officer, you're not in Salt Lake County. Your five counties are here in southern Utah. So I always hear about Salt Lake County, Salt Lake Valley having really bad air quality. They get the inversion and stuff like that. But for the most part, unless there's wildfires in the area, we're pretty good here, right?
Well,
It sounds like no.
We're always on the verge of not being in compliance with air quality.
Really?
Yeah, we're right on the bubble. And the question is, so they do an assessment every 5 or 7 years, depending on, you know, what the EPA is saying. And we get really close to not being in compliance.
Really?
As we grow. And, you know, we have some unique problems with our area that make it so it would be uniquely difficult for us to figure out what to do if we fall out of that compliance area. So you have to become part of what's called the Utah Clean Air Impact Plan.
So what are those unique problems that we have?
Well, so a lot of the air that we have, so you know as well as I do, when there's wildfires in California, we have haze, right? Yeah. And so we have this corridor of air flowing up from California that parks right here in southern Utah. And so there, because we don't have a ton of industry and things like that, that whatever poor air quality we see is really not self-generated. It's from other places. So really,
it does present a problem, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we have cars, but that's it. And the rest of it is from somewhere else. And so how do you create a plan that improves that air quality when it's not yours? It's coming from other places. And so in some places, their idea of improving air quality is getting a taller smokestack, right? So it goes somewhere else. And, yeah. And unfortunately, it's interesting how the physical dynamics of an area can create a place where they end up trapping air from other places. We had when I worked in Maryland, it was the same problem. The air would come from the Midwest and hit the ocean there and just camp there.
Yeah.
Maryland. And but the law doesn't recognize that. It just requires you to have a certain level of air quality, or else you have to implement measures to try and impact that. And if it doesn't impact it, then there's penalties. I mean, it's a very draconian law. And so I, to be honest, I'm a little worried about air quality.
Okay.
One, because it does have impact on health, right? People that would have asthma or other lung conditions and things, you know, really suffer when there's poor air quality. And two, if it falls to us in our area to start to implement plans to deal with that, it's hard to know what to do. Cars have gotten much better at polluting. They don't pollute nearly as much. And right. So really, in those plans, they don't even allow you to get a credit for doing inspections and stuff on cars. And so you end up with, well, what is our plan? What would we do to improve air quality here? And it'd be an interesting discussion. Hopefully you don't tip over into that point where we're out of compliance.
So a few weeks ago, maybe three weeks ago, we had air from, they said it was really hazy here. They said the air was coming down from fires in Oregon and Idaho.
Yeah.
Is that where it was coming from, and why did it stop here?
Yeah, some of that. There were also some in California right then. It was a kind of a perfect storm.
And we're right in the middle.
Yeah, you look at the air patterns, flyways and all that stuff, we end up right in the middle of all of it. So
wow.
There are times when they've documented haze here that came out of China. And so...
Wow.
So it'll be an interesting, there's no barrier to air.
Right. I mean, what do you do? So, right? Big giant fan.
So I don't, it's an interesting dilemma to contemplate. It's something we are aware of and we're looking at. But fortunately, so far, we've never been out of compliance. And so we've never had, you know, emission inspection stations and all that stuff. But as we continue to grow rapidly, as we, you know, become, we're really, the third or fourth largest area in the state now.
Yeah, for sure.
And catching up rapidly to the others. And so I think some of these things we usually we associate with other areas in the state will be things that we have to deal with as well.
By the way, I looked this up earlier because I was working on a different topic. Salt Lake, 212,000 people. West Valley, which is in the Salt Lake Valley, 132,000. West Jordan is third in the state at 114,000. These are current 2024 numbers. So those top three are all in Salt Lake County, which is over, what, almost 500,000 people right there. And then you go, Provo is fourth in the state in population at 112,000. But we're gaining quickly on Provo, West Jordan, and West Valley because they're actually losing population. We are gaining, and St. George is fifth at 107,000. The one caveat there is we may be passed by one other city that's growing faster than us, and that's Lehigh.
Yeah,
Lehigh is going crazy right now. They have two gigantic 6A schools, and what do they call Silicon Slopes, I think, is what they're calling it there. Mm-hmm. So,
and another way to look at it is county population, and you know, we're continuing to grow much more quickly than anywhere else in the state.
So. Yeah, that's true. With Hurricane and Washington, especially growing, room to grow and filling that room.
Well, you look at these quickly. Big subdivisions coming in down here. We're gonna grow very rapidly.
So back to air quality. One of the other topics is asthma and COPD, and I have obviously, with my wife has asthma. It's something I'm keenly aware of. My mom died from lung disease, and so for me this is an important topic. Will you kind of zone us in on how air quality really affects someone with other lung complications?
Yeah, so the quality of air you breathe makes a big difference, right? In exacerbations of asthma and, and COPD, of just the quality of life you can enjoy. So, you know, they have the air quality days where they say it's not a good day to go out.
Yeah.
You stay inside.
So does that really help? Do the filters in your house really help?
Yeah, they can. Sometimes, interestingly enough, the air quality inside your house is worse than the air quality outside of your house because of what you have.
If you burn something.
Up to you. Yeah. and some of the things that off-gas, all of, I mean, there's this air quality is a very complicated area, but we talked a little bit last week on how air quality can impact some things you don't necessarily think about, like there's a tie to dementia with air quality.
Wow.
which is kind of interesting. And so we're interested in air quality for a number of reasons, but I'm hoping, the optimist in me is that as we continue to improve the technologies around cars and things like that, we'll keep the air quality good. So one of the things about Southern Utah that people really enjoy is good, clean air, and I'd hate to see us slip into some of the things that other people have. So,
well, let me just say this. 5 years ago, when I started this job over 5 years ago, it was 99% of the time it was clear looking out at the mountains there to the south. Mm-hmm. I look out there now, and it's kind of not clear.
Yeah.
It's kind of hazy.
I mean, so when you talk about an inversion up in Salt Lake, what happens is the warmer air gets trapped below cooler air, right? Mm-hmm. And that can happen in any bowl or valley or whatever. And so Utah's uniquely set up to do that, and we are here as well. So we're not out of the woods, but we can all look to a future where we keep this figured out.
All right, there was a story on the news the last couple of days about the processed foods. And, you know, processed foods, you've got to watch out. You're not eating as much and everything. And that's great advice. But maybe one of the reasons is, and we didn't even think about that much, is the equipment and the packaging used in processed foods. It seems to be, and there's a couple of studies that are out right now, that stuff is leaching chemicals into the foods that we're eating. And causing, among other things, breast cancer. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month to rise. In fact, more women under the age of 50 are getting breast cancer now than at any time in history. And they think that, you know, chemicals from the foods we eat might be part of the problem. Doc, is it? I mean, what do you know about that?
Yeah. Could be. I mean, there's all kinds of potentials there. I don't know that the link's been very well established, but the links we do know about are enough, right?
Yeah.
So we've never been quite as overweight as we are now, and the link between overweight and breast cancer is very well established.
For sure.
you know, so it's those big four we talk about: eating your fruits and vegetables, exercising, you know, keeping a good weight, and not smoking.
And number five, getting enough sleep.
Getting enough sleep, absolutely, absolutely. And alcohol. Alcohol is actually an independent risk factor for cancer. I don't think people know that, but it actually ranks pretty high as a teratogen, you know, of something that'll cause cancer, carcinogen. And so
of the liver or the stomach or any
throat,
cancer,
all of it. Hmm. Yeah. And so we're back to our basic discussion about what is it that impacts health overall. And I think it's really easy to want to blame it onto something different and scary that we can, you know, fear. You know, we talk about risk perception and stuff, but in the end, almost always it comes back to the good old things your mom used to teach you.
Mm-hmm. And, good job, Mom.
We continue to keep trying to reinforce those messages. So.
All right, let's talk a little bit about arthritis now. I wanted to ask you, you know, you're in charge, obviously, the public health for the five counties. In particular, we're interested in Washington County. The perception when I moved to Washington County 30 years ago was this was a retirement town. I mean, there was a big portion of the population were people over the age of 60 or 65. Now I'm hearing, well, actually, St. George now is a resort town. It's a recreation town and not as much a retirement town as it used to be. Have the demographics changed in St. George? And therefore, things like arthritis maybe aren't as big a factor for a public health official like you?
Well, I guess it depends on how you ask that question. Okay. Are there more people here that are, you know, are there more opportunities for resorts and stuff like that? Yes, but they're not permanent residents, right? I think the permanent resident component of where we're at is continuing to age. And we'll continue to see those issues. So, you know, we talked about this in COVID, how, you know, most of the rest of the state comes down here to be in where it's warmer and more pleasant, and in a lot of ways they come here to die. And you know, I mean, I don't mean to sound like that way, but
it sounds bad, but it's true.
But we always have higher numbers of deaths in this area, but just because our proportion of the population that's elderly is higher. And
do you have any idea what that number is, by the way?
Well, it's really difficult to track down because the state tracks numbers based on primary residence, right? And so most residences for people that are aging or secondary residents here, and so you don't have a good track on that. And we don't have a track on what's a vacation rental versus a true home where somebody's living. Right. So there's estimates, there's guesses. The estimate is about 30%.
That's pretty big.
The homes in the area are second homes for somebody that's retired down here. Wow. So I do. Having said that, I do think we're learning more about arthritis and doing a little bit better with our arthritis. There's better medications and things like that. But arthritis, too, does better with, you know, things that really improve your antioxidant status, you know, exercise and eating right and those kinds of things. So as we learn more, there are those cases of arthritis that are about, you know, autoimmune function and things like that, and we're right on the verge, I think, of really cracking some of that, but it's not quite yet.
We've talked about it quite a few times on this show, but cardiovascular disease, heart disease, is the number one killer.
Yes.
In Utah, in America. I don't know if it's worldwide, but what is it a bigger deal in southern Utah because of our aged population, that we have more old people?
Well, so all of those factors accumulate with age, right? You're more likely to have heart disease when you're 70 than when you're 50 and those kinds of things. And so that doesn't mean there aren't some people that get it earlier, but almost always the chronic diseases accumulate as you get older. And so yes, we have more of it here. But it's not out of proportion for the age range. So you can do things statistically where you adjust for the age of the population and stuff. And so, you know, we're about in line with the rest of the population for the percentage of our people that have heart disease, but that's a high percentage, right? 2 out of 3 men will have heart disease in their life.
Crazy.
And half of women. So, you know, we've had this discussion where we say, you know, we get all excited about things that, you know, 1% or 0.5% of us will deal with, but something that is 66% of us, we rarely talk about or care about. And it highlights, and I think it's a protective part of our nature where we say, I'm used to that risk. I can, you know, process that. But when you want to really figure out how to live longer and healthier and all that, you got to pay attention to heart disease. It's always number one on the list. And there's a ton you can do to deal with, to help with that, right? And so, it'll always be a part of our discussion.
Yeah, heart disease is a killer. And yet, like you said, in order to, I don't know, deal with it mentally, sometimes we go, if it happens, it happens. Whatever. Yeah. I'm going to go on with life. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. Well, and to a certain extent, that's part of our right, right? Sometimes sometimes we have this idea, well, we should force people to do things that'll make them live healthier. But I don't know that that's our culture or the way we live in a society. We say, you know, I say we tell people what it is that can help them be healthier, but you know, you still have to make the decision, you know. When you go to the drive-through and you get, you know, the Big Mac versus whatever else, you know, there's always those choices, and they're choices you have to make on your own.
I have a relative, and I don't want to be too specific on who it is because I didn't ask him permission to talk about it, but he had just had his gallbladder out. He's having some stomach inflammation issues, and they put him on what he calls a very bland diet. And you know, he's a guy that has enjoyed life. He's a guy that has, you know, and I'm not saying he's a party or anything like that. He just, you know, his wife is an incredibly good cook, and he, you know, he's enjoyed some really good food for a long time. And, you know, in talking to him about the bland diet, he's like, he says it's brutal. He says, I've been, all my life I've eaten this incredibly good food. And now I go and I can't eat red meat right now. They've got him on, you know, if you're going to eat meat, it's got to be poultry or fish. And he says, I can't have anything spicy. I can't have tomato sauce right now, or you know, I mean, he just had this whole list of things he can't have, and I'm just like, wow. And in a way, Doc, you know, we were talking about, you know, disregarding some of the risks or whatever. In a way, you know, you know what? It's because my quality of life would be diminished if I did all the things I don't know. I guess that's a great argument back and forth. How much is too much? How much is too little? And
well, I think it becomes an individual choice, right?
Yeah.
What is years of life worth to you, you know, from a lifestyle standpoint? And I don't know that that's a common, a universal answer, but sometimes it's not nearly as bad as you think it's going to be, right? But I...
Yeah.
Let me just illustrate. We've tried to have a big emphasis on diabetes because it's 25% of the healthcare dollar. It will be 50% of the healthcare dollar probably within the next 10 years.
Wow.
It's just exploding. The impact on people's lives is dramatic. You know, it's the number one cause for amputations, number one cause of blindness, number one cause of, there's just all these, you know, untoward effects from diabetes. And it's pretty preventable, right? If you catch it when it's pre-diabetes and you do some basic things in your diet, you know, cut 5 to 10% of your body weight, then you don't get diabetes, right? And that's a big deal. But when we run screening events or we try and get people interested in coming and learning about whether they have pre-diabetes or not, they won't come. Mm-hmm. And the answer we always get is, well, I just don't want to know. I don't know how to feel about that. I mean, they certainly have that right, but it is a high price to get diabetes instead of knowing and implementing some basic things in your life.
I have a granddaughter who doesn't like to say goodbye. My son will say, hey, give grandma and grandpa, kisses, blow them kisses or whatever. And she doesn't want to say goodbye because if she says goodbye, that means we're going to leave.
Right.
And she, in her mind, her 4-year-old mind, if she doesn't say goodbye, we won't leave. Same kind of thing, right? I mean, if I don't know about diabetes, then I can't get it, can I?
Yeah. Well, what I don't know really can hurt you in this situation. Yeah, but it's interesting. People really will say to, I just don't want to know. And but I got us off the topic of the 30 conditions. So these are alphabetized, right? That's why we're doing it in this way.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get a break in. And you know what? We made our way through a good chunk of the list already.
Yeah.
Four or five things already. So we'll be back with more on the Andy Griffin Show after this with Dr. Blodgett.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
We're on with Public Health Director Dr. David Blodgett here on the Andy Griffin Show on this Wednesday, the second day of October. And by the way, public health guy, it's over 100 again today. For the second time ever in October, we're going to have 2 days in a row over 100. Talk about a little public health threat, right?
Yeah.
Being too stinking hot in October.
Yeah, we heat is a problem. It is.
Unbelievable.
It kills people every year.
The good news is at least it cools down at night. And in the throes of July and August, we're 110, but also it's like 85, 90 at night.
Night.
So at least we have a cool down. At night. All right, let's talk immunizations. I had one of your nurses, is it Mandy or Mindy?
Mindy, nurse, probably.
Mindy, okay, yeah. Mindy came in and gave us flu shots last week.
Yeah.
It was nice to have her in here. The needle was a little bigger than I remember the old needle being. I don't know if it's my perception or if the needle is bigger this year because there's more stuff in it or what, but she did a good job, and we did get our flu shot. And, I had a few people say, it's a waste of time. There's so many strains of flu. Why do that? And maybe if you can address what people have asked me.
Well, so on the needles, medical manufacturers are turning over all the time. It's crazy. And we've had the one that was manufacturing the needles we really liked went out of business. And so we've been trying to find a new needle manufacturer. And
people don't even
think
about that.
One, but it's all stuff on the back end that you don't really notice.
Yeah.
So flu vaccines are developed by taking the current the flu that's present all over the world and trying to make the best guess estimate that they can on what strain will be circulating during flu season that next year, right? So you look at what's going on in Australia when they're in winter and we're in summer kinds of things, and and what was circulating the year before, and most of the time they do pretty well. It gets pretty close, but sometimes it's a miss, you know. Even when it's a miss, though, people that are vaccinated do better than people that don't. And
so even if it doesn't stop the flu, it can make it so it's not as bad.
Right. And the goal, and we talked about this in COVID, is not absolutely eradicating the disease. It's to decrease the chances of hospitalization and death, right? And so that's where flu shots succeed admirably. And that's really the point, right? So a milder case is much better than a worse case, and your chances of actually getting flu are decreased as well. Don't let me short the benefits of that. But everybody tells me, well, you know, I got the flu vaccine and then I got sick. Well, flu is one disease in the cornucopia of upper respiratory tract infections that hit. So most likely those people had something else, but even if they had flu and tested positive for flu, the studies and the data are that it's a less severe case when you've been vaccinated for influenza. Influenza still, even today, is the number one infectious disease killer in the United States.
Not COVID-19.
And in the world, yes. Much higher than COVID. Again, within 2 years of COVID, flu was back on top. And so we're back to our risk perception. You know, we shut society down for COVID, but, you know, flu, it's no big deal. We don't have to worry about it. Yeah. So I, you know, and this debate just gets more rancorous all the time. And so I think we have to go back to that principle we talked about, is public health is best when it's about recommendations and not mandates, and letting people make decisions, but understanding what the consequences are for that, you know.
In my social media feed, on both on Twitter and Facebook, I've been getting a lot of people who said, well, the COVID shots are causing heart disease and killing young people. And I've asked you before this, you've talked about this before, but there's just not enough evidence to prove that's actually happening. Is that true?
Yeah. Or so they did early on make the link towards a condition called pericarditis, which is an inflammation around the lung, the heart.
The heart, yeah.
The vast majority of the time it was very mild. Whether or not it was actually a link, I think is up for debate. But what one of the strange things about the realities in the vaccine world is, you take these diseases that kill thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people, and you bring it down to where almost nobody dies from it, right? 99% reduction. But then you start saying, well, let's say there's a complication there, and you can't rule out a complication in one in a million cases or something like that. And somehow that outweighs the benefit from the vaccine. And have I done vaccinating my kids for COVID after the initial series? No, I don't think the benefit's there. I don't think it's worthwhile. But to say that for somebody that's elderly, not getting COVID isn't a good thing is just not true, right? I mean, if you're over 65 and you get COVID, it's a significant disease. It's going to cause trouble. And so, you know, when a disease is 15% fatal or 18% fatal, somewhere in that range, and you have a vaccine for it, it's crazy not to do that. But that's a recommendation. It's an advice, and all of us have to make our own decisions on that, you know. And so I've been at this game long enough to have gained a little wisdom in some of this area. And you know, a lot of people wear their anti-vaccine badge like a badge of honor, and they'll flaunt it, and then when their kids get sick, and they're right in there getting vaccinated. So it's not to say they don't really believe it, but when you're faced with the reality of what some of these diseases are, it's terrifying, right? I mean, you have a disease like diphtheria, which has largely been eliminated from the earth, but you know, you die by slowly being choked to death because this exudate in the back of your throat builds up. You know, I mean, those are things we don't even recognize as a society anymore, because it's been so long since we've seen those diseases. But when you do, you realize, man. So all immunization is attempting to do is allow your body to create a defense mechanism against the disease that's a bad actor that often kills. And so whether you're exposed to it naturally or whether you're exposed to the immunization, you know, you're going to create an immunity if it doesn't kill you. And so the question is, how can we protect people's lives? Immunization categorically has saved more lives than perhaps anything else we've done as a human species from the beginning.
I don't think you can even argue that. To me, it's pretty obvious. All right, let's shift focus here. There was a story on The Wire today linking dental hygiene, or the lack thereof, with some cancers of the mouth, of the brain, of the neck, of the, you know, and we don't think about, okay, brush your teeth or use mouthwash, floss, whatever it is, as being part of your physical health, right? I mean, okay, yeah, I might get a cavity, root canal, whatever. That's what we think about. But so many people don't want to go to the dentist, and a lot of people just don't. I'll brush my teeth because it makes my breath smell good, and that's it, or whatever. Yeah. But as it turns out, they're finding some pretty important links to dental hygiene and the rest of your body.
It's true. And you know, we've long known that things like endocarditis and things, you know, where you get a buildup of bacteria on the valves in your heart and things mm-hmm. related to your heart health and to your dental health. that chronic source of chronic infection just kind of agitating in there isn't good. Your body doesn't like being constantly up in arms and trying to fight something off. And so when you've got that kind of steady influx of bacteria and, you know, infection going into your system, it can cause havoc with your system for sure. So, you know, good dental health, yeah, it keeps your breath fresh too, which is nice. But and it's nice to have teeth to chew with and all that stuff. So so it's, we're back to what your mother told you about, you know, brushing and flossing. Teeth. But it is a component of your overall health. And
Dr. Bullock from Precision Dental was on. He comes on occasionally, and he brought a gift for me. A tongue scraper. And he said, now go in the bathroom and scrape your tongue. He said, I want you to do it here in the studio, but go in the bathroom and scrape your tongue. And I did. And, you know, it was kind of gross and there was gunk and stuff. But he says, you would be surprised how much bacteria there is on the tongue.
Yeah.
People think, okay, I got to brush my teeth. I got to floss. Those are great things. Do them. But you need to, I guess, clean the tongue even occasionally.
Yeah. It's, well, we have good technology now. These, you know, electronic toothbrushes do a great job of cleaning off extra stuff. And it's an area that shouldn't be as big a deal as it is, but it is.
That's too bad. All right, let's get another commercial break in. More with Dr. Blodgett after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 951 on KDXU. Dr. Blodgett is with me today. We're talking about, well, obviously public health and mortality and what we can do to maybe stave off mortality and have a good quality of life. We've talked about things like quality of the air that we breathe, diabetes, pre-diabetes, and we have not talked much about obesity, maybe because I'm feeling guilty because I'm a little bit there myself. And I didn't used to be, you know, every person is unique. Every person has reasons. I didn't really change my lifestyle, and yet my lifestyle changed me because of some health problems I had with my legs and stuff. But obesity is real. Being overweight will lead to myriad problems. And we talked about it a little bit, the argument of, well, we don't know the long-term effects of, say, some of these, you know, Ozempic, some of these diet medicines, diet drugs that are out there, but how do you weigh the potential side effects, maybe colon cancer, we don't know what it's going to be, versus the effects of, you know what, if it helps me to lose 50 pounds over 5 or 10% of my body weight, then that's actually a good thing, and I won't maybe get heart disease and some of these other things that come with being overweight.
Yeah, you know, I think the verdict is out on the long-term impact of those drugs, but short-term, there's some dramatic impacts, right? I mean, people are lowering their blood pressure and, you know, diabetes and things like that. Interestingly, and I can't explain this, so put that in the file of how do you explain that, but if you take the drug for diabetes, it has a diabetes drug, they don't lose nearly as much weight as if you take it for a weight loss drug.
The same drug.
Same drug. So why is that? I don't know. But it's being consistently shown.
There's a psychological element here,
there
maybe.
There has to be an element of they change their lifestyle along with taking the medication. And, you know, the placebo effect is powerful, but the human brain is pretty remarkable. And so I think what happens is they say, well, I'm taking the medications, I'm losing weight, that's great, and all of this. And they actually start to do other things that help with that as well. So
I know a lot of the diet doctors, they call them diet doctors, weight loss doctors, will tell you, look, okay, I'm going to let you take Wegovy or Ozempic or one of those others, but Zet Bound. But you've got to understand that when you lose weight, you know, you still need to make some changes.
Yes.
You still need to exercise. You need to do these other things so that you can't, I mean, if you can't afford $1,000 a month or whatever it is for the rest of your life, when you go off of it, it's all going to come right back unless you've made changes.
It does. Plus, and we've talked about this, you lose muscle mass when you lose, you know, body mass overall. And so you got exercise to keep that up. Otherwise, you know, that has impacts on health as well. So it's not nearly as easy as, you know, you take the shot once a month and all of a sudden life becomes, you know, perfect. And so I think they're being widely used and prescribed. But there are those side effect moments where you realize, you know, some people, the rate of discontinuance of the medication is about 40%.
Really? Mm-hmm. About 2 out of 5, huh?
Yeah. And then there is that problem of, you know, once you go off it you bounce right back to where you're in, sometimes worse than you were. And so you've lost all the benefit if without some of that kind of, all those boring things we talk about, some of that behavior change.
Yeah.
So.
Boring things, you know, like eating right and exercising, getting enough sleep and not smoking and drinking. And,
sound all like right. a broken so, record sometimes, don't I? But
would you say you have this niece and she's 5'3", but she weighs 250 pounds and she came to you, Dr. Blodgett, my Uncle Dave, my weight loss doctor says I can take Wegovy if I want to. It'll help me lose weight. It'll improve my quality of life right now. It will make it so that, you know, I maybe am a bit less chance to get cancer and heart disease. As a doctor, as an Uncle Dave, would you say do it?
You know, I think I probably would.
Yeah.
But I think you have to make sure that they understand it's not going to do any good without changing some lifestyle issues.
It's not magic.
And we're not good as a society at talking about those lifestyle issues with people, right? I mean, I think we're okay about talking about them in general. But when you're in front of somebody and, you know, it becomes a, you need to do this.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard.
You know? It is.
The studies are that doctors just don't talk about it nearly enough, and
well, because a patient,
it's a social thing. You know?
Yeah, if a patient gets lectured by a doctor, then the patient's going to go, I think I'll go to this other doctor. He doesn't lecture me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you lose a customer
exactly,
basically.
or they take it seriously in the moment that the doctor's talking to him, but then as soon as they get away, they don't, and can't have an impact, but. But I think from an impact kind of standpoint, doctors like to do things that they know will impact directly.
Yeah.
And sometimes that kind of advice is hard. So.
Yeah, not sometimes, always.
Yeah.
It is definitely difficult. And I'm sure, and you at a grand level, but a doctor at a localized or personal level is probably frustrated at times when I see what's happening with this patient. I know how to fix it, but I also know they're not going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. If we could figure out behavior change, how to really get people to change their behaviors, it would be better for everybody. Right. But, but it really comes down to what you want to do and what your desires and hopes and dreams and what you're willing to implement in your life. And that becomes a very personal thing that, somebody on the radio isn't going to help you with.
Yeah. Well, and it's so complicated because for every person that has a problem with obesity or whatever, there's a reason that they're obese. There's, you know, maybe it hurts to exercise. Maybe they are so busy at work they don't have time to go to the gym. Whatever it is, you know, maybe they had a physically active job when they were thinner. Now they have a desk job, and so they're just not as active. So they didn't change the way they eat, but they changed their lifestyle. And you know, there's a million reasons.
Well, and you know, we talk a lot currently about the mental health side of things, you know, when you lack motivation because you're depressed or anxious or something,
yeah.
That there's a lot of factors there too. So there's all of these issues are multifactorial, we call them. There's a lot of things that impact into it. And the best person to figure out what that means is that person, right?
Yeah.
And how they're going to deal with that in their life.
So. Yeah. I feel like I'm in therapy right now with psychologist Dr. David Blodgett.
All right. Well, Dr. Blasey, we're out of time. I know it's a struggle sometimes for you to get here just because you've got to come down from Cedar and traffic is getting brutal anymore. But I'm so glad you took the time to spend with us.
I'll be here on time next week.
Really appreciate you being here. This is the Andy Griffin Show. Hey, we get to hear from Mayor Michelle Randall tomorrow on the program. Thanks for listening. I'm Andy. See you tomorrow.
Shop Macy's VIP sale, going on now. Use your coupon or Macy's card and take an extra 30% off the latest fall trends from designers that rarely go on sale. And save 15% off skincare, makeup, fragrances, and more. Plus, shop fall specials for even more great deals on top brands at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.